You're listening to Further Faster in association with Montane, the podcast that asks ultra athletes, mountaineers, and explorers the why and the how.
Hello, and welcome to Further Faster in association with Montane. So my name is Daniel Nielsen, and well, we started this podcast to delve into why mountaineers, explorers, and endurance athletes do what they do, why they push themselves, why they feel the need to put one foot forward or crank out another turn of the pedal. In this episode, I spoke to Jenny Graham. She's a Scottish endurance athlete, and the resulting conversation fulfilled pretty much everything that we set out to do in the first place. In this searingly honest conversation, we learn about her record breaking around the world cycle, how she got into riding and running very long distances, and how she balances it with her work and her family life, and why, through her work with the Adventure Syndicate that she co-directs, inspiring children is one of her most important aims. Jenny's a wonderful interviewee, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it as much as I did. Listen in. Okay, so here I am with Jenny Graham. Welcome to Further Faster.
Oh, thanks, Daniel. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no. Well, we've been looking forward to having you on for a while anyway. So, yeah, really chuffed to speak to you.
Oh,
so,
great.
You are first and foremost a cyclist. Is that how you describe yourself?
I'm not sure if I would, actually.
Ooh, okay. So,
I love the outdoors. I love hill walking. I do a bit of climbing. I love sort of adventuring about the place, and I like doing sort of ultra endurance things,
right,
whether that's on or off the bike. I suppose that was the carrot that got me into long distance cycling. It was the endurance side of things,
right,
as opposed to the cycling. I always sort of see myself as falling into cycling.
Right. Okay. Almost by accident.
Almost by accident. A really good accident.
Sure. So, well, tell us about the genesis then. When did you kind of first go, endurance is my kind of thing? Was this from an early age, or was it, when did you kind of think endurance was your, long distance was your thing?
So the thing was, I never classed myself as sporty. I never really connected with sport in school, or I was never in like any sports teams or anything like that.
Right.
And what I was in was the Army Cadets. So I went to Army Cadets from when I was sort of 14 to 16, and all my pals went there, and we did all these endurance, like training and events and like running about running about in expeditions, like through the night, and you know, swimming in lochs, and all these sort of full on.
It sounds pretty hardcore.
Camping out. Yeah, it was really, really hardcore, you know, like back in your rubbish sleeping bag, like huddled up with your pal, shivering away and trying to recover for the next day. But I never realized that was a thing. I just thought it was something, you know, I just thought it was sort of playing, if you like, and it was just because we were kids, and it was really good fun, but there was nothing, unless I wanted to go to the army, then I couldn't. I never saw the sort of transferable skills until I went to college. So when I was sort of in my mid-20s, my son was going to, I had my son by then, he was off to...
Hang on.
Things.
Oh, hang on. I lost you there. Sorry.
No, it's fine.
Okay, hang on a second. So can you start from, your mid-20s?
College, early 20s.
Yeah.
So it was only in my early 20s that I'd had my son by then, and he was going off to nursery, and I had a bit more time on my hands, so I applied for a course at Inverness College, and it was an introduction to outdoor activities, outdoor sports.
Right.
And it was only then that I realized, it was like, oh, all these things that I did as a teenager, like, actually adults do them as well.
Right.
It's a sport, and it's a thing, and from there, so that was sort of 15 years ago, and from there I like just absolutely fell in love with that way of life and made a career out of it. And yeah, obviously like a huge passion for the outdoors, but the seeds were definitely planted when I was a teenager.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think I would have ever applied for the course if it hadn't sparked something in me. I remember reading it was advertised in the local paper, and I read it, and it actually said, like, you know, do you like running up hills, or, you know, jumping in rivers, and like, it was using all these words that I could connect with, and I was like, yes. Oh yeah, I do like that. Yes, wake me up.
So how has your kind of career, your sort of professional career developed?
Yeah, so what happened after there, I went through, there was a couple of courses at Inverness, but they were concentrating on getting you national governing body awards, so as then you could work as an instructor. So I did a bit of instructor work around the place. Sorry, is that cat really loud?
It's fine.
2 seconds. Oh, I'm at my sister's house.
Oh my goodness. I think we might leave that bit in. That was the loudest cat in the world.
So loud and so far, it's unbelievable.
Very funny.
Sorry, I don't even know where I'd got to there.
You were talking about what were you talking about, the sort of the professional development and everything was kind of governing bodies.
Yes, okay, so when I went to college, I did a couple of the sort of years at college, and it was all concentrating on the national governing bodies.
Yeah.
But you know, because I was so new to it, I was using a lot of the time to build up experience and working with groups and things like that. So I got some basic national governing bodies when I left, so I could work as a freelancer about the place. But I very quickly. What happened? I started volunteering for a lottery funded project that was working with the Highland Council, and it was working with young people that were at risk of being out of mainstream education.
Right.
So they were still in school at the moment, but they'd been highlighted by they'd just been they were at risk basically of either losing their placement at school or going on a part-time timetable. So
sure.
But they were still in mainstream at the moment. And so I applied like loads of times. They kept saying no. And then eventually one man, Ron Budirk, answered the phone. He was like, yes, come on in. And I had very, very little experience then, but I was pretty good with people. Like I had sort of, pretty good communication skills, I suppose.
Yeah.
And that saw me through. So I did a few years with them, eventually got a job with them. And then got a full-time position with the Highland Council, working with the same groups of young people, but it was in a, rather than just sort of being helicoptered in to do the outdoor stuff, I was working in a school where you were involved in everything, like the whole part of the young person's sort of life at school. So it was great, and I could use my outdoor qualifications in that. We ran lots of things there. And then on the side, I also worked to keep my skills up with adults and sort of people who really, really wanted to know. Like, you know, I love telling stories and I love all the history of being in the hills. But the reality is the teenagers I was working with just didn't care.
Yeah.
So I would, to keep that side of things up, I would freelance for different places.
Right. Okay. I mean, now might be a good, we're going to flit around a little bit, but now might be a good time to talk, we're talking about young people, to talk about the Match the Miles thing that you did. So this is something that you've just recently, I think you've been doing it for a couple of years now, but you've recently done. We'll go back and talk about your kind of, your early sort of athletic career in a bit. But tell us what Match the Miles is and what the Adventure Syndicate is.
Brilliant. Okay, so I'm one of the directors at the Adventure Syndicate, and we are a collective of female ultra endurance cyclists, really, who some of us race, some of us tour, but we all have a passion for going away and doing these big feats, endurance, but coming back and sharing the stories, and whether that's through words or written form or making like films, media, and just sort of sharing with folk what our stories of being out on the road.
Okay, who else is in it?
So it's myself and Lee Craigie direct it.
Okay.
And then we've got a pool of syndicateers who are also sort of involved in various different ways to help running it and to help and deliver some things when, you know, and things like that, and telling stories.
Okay.
Yeah, so a bunch of us.
Okay, perfect. So tell us a little. What's the ethos? What's the aim for it?
Okay, great. So our aim at the Adventure Syndicate is to inspire, encourage, and enable others to believe that maybe they might be capable of more than they imagine they are.
Okay.
So that is like the inspiring bit, is the coming back and us telling stories. But we can't just stop there, because we need to help enable people to see that actually this might be something that they can do as well. So then we like run courses, and we go into schools. Like, so recently we've just gone into 10 schools across Scotland, right, and told them these stories and set up a program that they can get involved with.
Okay.
And that's when the enabling bit comes in. So the program that we set up was called Match the Miles. Mm-hmm. It was the third year that it's run. And this year we rode from the very top West Point of Scotland at Cape Wrath Lighthouse, and over 5 days we cycled, bike packing, as much off road as we could, yeah, to the Scottish border. And while we were going on that trip, we had a GPS spot tracker, so the schools could log in and see exactly where we were and how many miles we were doing that day. And they were collectively encouraged to collect up all their miles, whether it was like riding or walking to school, whether it was after school, you know, events, times out with their family or friends, mm-hmm, and lunchtime sessions. Like, the schools went crazy for lunchtime sessions, and
brilliant.
So schools would collect up their miles, and it was a race, so they would try and beat us to the Scottish border.
Okay.
They were on the map as well, so everybody who signed up to it got a dot on that map. So as well as Lee and I being there with our spot tracker, everybody else's dot was on there too. So.
Amazing. And what was the response? What was some of the feedback that you've had from, well, this year and previous years?
Yeah, it's just fantastic. This year it really shot off. Like, last year it was more of a pilot and we had 6 schools on board, but we knew from social media sort of posts that we were getting that actually more people were into this than just the schools that we'd been working with. Like, we were having schools signing themselves up as we were going and just doing it anyway.
Amazing. Go on, sorry.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, this year we had about 50 teams, and that was a mixture of schools, wow, individuals, workplaces, companies to sign up for it. So it was,
amazing.
Amazing. We had a photographer along with us, and so James Robertson comes along and takes the most incredible pictures. He loves it most when we're suffering quite a lot.
Okay.
And so it was, so we'd be out and we'd basically be telling the story as we're going through like 3 different social media posts a day,
right,
and we'd be telling the story as we're going, taking these gorgeous pictures, and then the schools or whoever's the teams that are involved in it, they get involved, they reply to us, they take their own pictures, they take their own videos, and so it's really interactive, mm-hmm, as we're going along. Yeah,
brilliant. And how, especially from a young person's perspective, what is it that you're really, are you trying to inspire them to? Is it a matter of about fitness, or is it a matter about getting outside, or a mixture of the two? What is it that you think? I mean, from all your experience as well, working with these kids and young people, what is it that they really benefit from?
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, being part of something like this, you know, when you're part of something bigger, it's not just you like having to go out on your bike. It's like, oh, actually, like I'm part of something quite exciting, quite big, and I've got pals to go out with, and this is fun. This is actually fun. So there's a bit of that to sort of changing the mentality towards what they might think cycling or walking means. And it's also a bit of realizing like the whole point of doing it in Scotland was that we were passing quite a lot of the schools that we were working at. Actually, some of them came out and met us along the way. And so it's sort of to show them, look, we were up at your school. We've just cycled for 500 miles on the same bit of road. Like you're following us, your school's collectively matching us. Like you are capable of this as well. This isn't something for us as, you know, endurance cyclists who have been training for years. This is something that's actually achievable to everybody. So I think if you can plant that seed, it's a bit like the seeds that were planted for me when I was in the cadets. You know, if you can just start planting that seeds now, and I think it's a sort of great way to adopt a more positive mindset for what you're capable of.
Sure. And for you personally, when was that kind of moment where you realized that this was possible for you?
The cycling around the world.
Or the endurance kind of element of what you do.
So I suppose, so going back to cadets, I was always the best one at staying up like half the night, almost sometimes all the night, and then still going out for the run at 6 in the morning and still functioning the next day. And my pals would be like dying all around me. And so I always knew that I had this sort of ability to stay up and you know function the next day, not for a very long amount of time, but like for one night. And then when I got into a sort of I started hill walking a bit more, and I was always attracted to like the epics, you know, oh, how many like miles can we do in a day? If we run them, can we do them a bit faster, you know, if we're not bothered getting home in time. So it's built up gradually. It's built up really gradually that I sort of realized that this was something that I could do. And but then my first night riding all night by myself wasn't that long ago. I was doing the Cairngorm loop, and I think it must have been like 3 maybe 4 years ago. The thing had been called off. There was so much snow. I'd walked with my bike for like 12 hours. It was horrendous all through the school. And I was like, right, I'm never actually going to finish this because I need to go home for like, I had like nervous my parents the next night. So I was like, this is, I'm never going to finish this. But I've never stayed up all night by myself. I've always been up riding or walking with friends. So let's do that, because I was finding that I was taking part in these endurance events and I felt like I had to sleep. I was like, oh, it's 2 in the morning, I better sleep because you know I have to sleep. And I would get this sort of panic about it. So by staying up all night in the Cairngorm loop, I felt like it changed something in me. It was like, oh, I don't have to actually go to my bed. I can't night. And then I started playing with that a little bit more. So it's funny, it's all just little gradual sort of steps and things that you do to make you realize
I mean,
this.
so do you, I mean, is that one of your advantages, do you think, over other competitors, that you do have that ability to stay up? Or is it just a kind of a shift in mindset that actually for a day, you know what, I don't have to?
Yeah, I think it's a shift in mindset. I think a lot of people who do these things, I mean, they're, you know, are either pretty good at going on minimal sleep or are so fast, like when they're riding, that they can afford to get 7 hours sleep a night, and then really, really hard. Like I don't feel like I'm that kind of rider. I'm much more of that sort of diesel engine tractor kind of feel about me. I'll just keep on going. So there's lots of different ways, but it is a mindset. It's like every time you do something new or you explore what your body and mind might be capable of, then it's sort of breaking down a barrier. You know, each time it breaks down a barrier, and then the next time you go and do something, you can push it even further. It's a fantastic journey to be on.
For sure. And when did the idea of this of the round the world cycle ride, begin to form for you?
Yeah, so I'd been doing lots of different races, and I went away on an adventure syndicate training camp. So this was before I was one of the directors. So mm-hmm. I just went along as a participant. And I think I'd gone part-time at work at this point. My son had, I'd gone part-time at work. My son had left school, and I was like, right, I actually really want to do more of this. Like, the only way that I'm going to take it the next step is with more time. So I had gone part-time, and then I saw a training camp at the Adventure Syndicate, and I went away on it. And when I was away there, I met this guy called John Hampshire, who was coaching. He was giving coaching sort of tips and advice and chats when I was away, and I'd never had any sort of formal coaching. Right. Like Lee Craigie had she'd been through, you know, the whole British cycling process. So she was always like my go-to. Like, I would always be like nagging her about coaching, nagging her what she'd be doing. And she'd just be like, oh God, shut up, Jenny. but this guy actually really, really wanted, like, you know, he was a coach and he really wanted to chat about it. So it's like, brilliant. So I spoke with him for the whole week. I was going out to Arizona, and I was like, had lots of plans. And when I came home, he'd sent me this email saying, you know, I would love to give you a year's free coaching. Like, just no, like, he's like, no pressure. Like, he knew that I was part-time. He knew that I would never pay for a coach. I wasn't in a position to pay for a coach. But he's like, no pressure put on you. It would just be interesting to see what, like, everyday people can do with an opportunity.
Wow.
Wow. Exactly. Wow. I couldn't believe it. I actually just burst out crying. It was like, are you joking me? I felt like Charlie, you know, in Willy Wonka. Ticket to get in the factory.
amazing.
And so I went off to Arizona and stuff. Like, I already had,
oh my goodness,
my
like winning the lottery.
Yeah, I know. And so I had most of my year planned out, but I started sort of building a relationship with John. And then when I came back, you know what it's like, it's always when you come back from something, you're recovering, mm-hmm. you're sort of at your most vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I was sick. Couch, and I was looking up because I like had already thought this year, oh, I might go on a big tour or something, but as soon as I heard about John, I was like, right, no, this is a race. Like, whatever I do has to be absolutely testing my mind and body to the limit, because he might go after a year, and yeah, I need to make most of it.
Yeah.
And so I'm a mountain biker. That's the other thing to know. Like, you know, that's my background is mountain biking. I got a road bike maybe 3 years ago, okay. So as I could train to be on the mountain bike, so as I could be training. And then I just fell in love with the distances that you could do on the bike, on the road bike. So I was looking at lots of different endurance mountain bikes events. And then I kept coming back to like the round the world, sort of stumbled across around the world. And I was like, oh man, like I am doing that distances already. Like, you know, I can't remember what the average distance was that Paola had, but I was like, I'm already doing that maybe for like 5 days in a row. Like, could I just keep on doing that? I wondered if I could. And then as soon as I started thinking about it, it was like, I'd planted that seed in myself. And so, but I was really nervous. Like, this was nothing blasé. I was so embarrassed even saying it out loud, because I still didn't feel that I knew what I could do, and I knew, you know, like in my own world, like I knew that I was doing well and pushing myself and, you know, breaking down all these sort of barriers. But I that's big, putting yourself on that sort of scale,
yeah.
that you can cycle around the world. It was a bit like, who do you think you are, Jenny?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're just like from Inverness, you're like so ordinary and normal. Into that adventure mold, like pipe down. And but I tried to pipe down, I couldn't. I was just like, I know I might not fit the mold, but I actually think I can do the riding. So what a dilemma to be in. Like,
yeah.
Oh, and anyway, started telling people. I told John, maybe he was one of the first people I told anyway, and he was just like, yep, I will definitely work with you on that.
Brilliant.
And then, so he knew what my riding was like, and he wasn't horrified. So I was like, oh,
okay.
Well, take this as a positive.
Yeah, this is the guy who knows your riding better than anyone else. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. So went from there. But there was only a year in between sort of saying it out loud for the first time and setting off. So it wasn't a massive turnaround.
Right, you sound like the person who just gets on with things. And was it what? I mean, we won't go into the full story, but I mean, was it kind of what you expected? What were the other what surprised you most about doing this? So you cycled around the world in 124 days, becoming the fastest woman and beating the previous record by, was it 20 days?
20 days, yeah.
Yeah.
So I traveled like by myself, so it was completely on my own, and I was self-supported. So I had no team with me to, give me a bed or food or anything like that. And like that was a conscious decision. I didn't even explore the supported aspect of it. I wanted to do it by myself. And I think what surprised me most out of the whole thing, apart from actually getting to the start line, which is the biggest surprise,
Okay.
Was how content I felt out there. Like,
Right.
there was this freedom in, yes, you were cycling long days, and yes, it was really tough at times, and you went through every sort of emotion imaginable, but there was almost something quite liberating in that you had the time and the space to let yourself go through that emotions that you didn't get. I wasn't getting emails,
Yeah.
I was online, I was getting, I was in contact with friends and family, but I wasn't sort of bombarded with adult life. I didn't even have to decide where I was going. I just knew that I was getting up the next day and cycling in the same direction.
Yeah.
It was just fantastic. It was like every single day I felt a moment, at least one moment, of being content and happy and not wishing that I was anywhere else in the world. It was like, and so, and there was some really tough times in there, but I was just like, yep, this is still like, I was it sounds a bit cheesy now that I'm sitting at home, but like at the time I was like, I'm actually born to be doing this. That's how right it felt. It was
Yeah.
like, it's just like, yeah, this is my place here on this bike right now. So
Amazing.
that surprised me. I thought I'd be lonely, like I'd never been away. I'd been a mum like my whole adult life, so I'd
Yeah.
never actually been away for more than a few weeks. When Lachlan got like older and stuff, I could go away for a bit longer, but I'd never spent more than like 3 weeks away from my family or away from my home or stuff like
Yeah,
that.
yeah.
I was actually away.
Yeah, through, Russia and Mongolia and, there was some pretty serious places you were going through.
Exactly. But I mean, I'd done a bit of traveling. I'd gone to, like I'd done a bit of traveling. I'd done traveling on bike, and I'd, traveled alone, and I've broken down all the skills that it took to go and do that. It's just
Sure.
that this was on quite a big scale.
Yeah, a fairly big
Just
scale.
me.
I it's amazing, an incredible achievement. So how do you so you I mean this is something that I think I don't know, like marathon runners feel that or the first time you do something like this, you don't often expect to enjoy it. You just expect it to be kind of a massive suffer fest, and there are very low moments in all kind of endurance sports as well. But I think the thing that often gets forgotten in these conversations is like these things are can actually be enjoyable, yeah, or at least give you that sense of happiness, really, isn't it? They're joyous occasions.
Absolutely. And I do actually quite often in endurance events, that is the mindset that I'm in. I don't do very well being in too much pain or being too I mean, I can suffer really well, but I think there is a mindset. So I sort of a lot of the time choose to my mindset to be that I'm actually having a good time, even if anybody looked at it and they might be like,
Minority, mate.
I'm like, yep, this is fun
This is
because you see
really good.
look at the fun I'm having and like just laugh. Like I'm really good at being able to sort of laugh at how ridiculous the situation is that you're into. And that like that helped for this anyway, yeah.
For sure, for sure. And when things did get tough, and I mean, what was it, kind of the physical strain? Was it the strain of being alone? Was it the strain of being in a foreign country and having to deal with, I don't know, red tape or bureaucracy or whatever? What were the moments that you felt out of your comfort zone?
I think, I mean, straight away, within just over a week, I was sort of faced with the Trans-Siberian Highway, which was so incredibly dangerous. And I felt really alone there because, and it was the first time that it hit me, I think, that I was like, you are not only alone, but you're making every single decision for the next 4 months by yourself. Yeah. Like, nobody at home knows. Like, if I messaged home and was like, oh, I don't really know what to do, the roads are really busy, yeah. They'd be like, well, get on the plane. Yeah, and I'm like, I'm there. So that sort of decision making, I think it took me until I got to China. So that was like 5 weeks in before I actually trusted myself. I was like, yeah, anything I decide, it's for the good of getting around the world as fast as I can. Like, I can be trusted. Right. Because I want more than anyone else. But it took me that amount of time to get into that. The weather, oh man, the weather could properly get you down. Like, if I, you know, I'm from the Highlands of Scotland, uh-huh. I train all my winters in the Highlands of Scotland.
Sure.
And stuff. I'm like used to wind and rain and snow and bad stuff, but it just, yeah, it really, like, when you're out in it maybe for a week at a time, 2 weeks at a time, mm-hmm. and just like raining every single day, rain bouncing off the ground, and you know, you're bibbing out, you're, nothing's drying off, it wears you down.
Yeah.
Like physically and mentally wears you down. So that was quite hard. I mean, it's so much easier when it's, you know, when it's sunny. Yeah. But I mean, we know that anyway. Yeah, I think I was more surprised at how much the weather affected me.
Right.
Yeah, I was
surprised. Especially given,
I thought I had.
Yeah. Given where you're from.
Australia, of all places, as well. In Australia, you know.
Oh really? Oh my word.
Okay. Yeah. You mean?
And how do you get through those sort of things? Do you laugh at it? Do you talk to yourself through it? Do you just get your head down and power on? I mean, how do you?
All those things.
Okay.
All those things. I mean, when you're riding for 15 hours a day, not one thing works for the whole.
Okay.
So you have moments that you, like, I've got this excellent picture. It's 4 in the morning. My feet are literally like rotting off of me. They are like, I'm walking on glass. I've been out in the rain for so much.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in this toilet block that's like covered in poo. It's the most disgusting toilet block I'd ever been in. And then I sort of spent about 20 minutes taking this really good selfie of me and my feet just to capture the moment. And I was like, afterwards, I didn't realize the time I was doing, but afterwards I was like, whoa, that was a brilliant coping mechanism, because you could have crumbled there. Like, that was a real low point. And instead I was like, oh, I'm gonna get a really good picture and send it to my mates, because they lose the plot when I send them feet pictures. And it was just like, managed just to like switch my brain into like, you need to laugh at this, because you know, it's, yeah, like it's not life or death, but it's like really miserable. And or I would, like, you know, use audiobooks and use music, and I'd sing, like, you know, I'd put on my favorite playlist, for example, and I would just like sing and try and like block out my thoughts. Or I would just have to go with it and let myself be miserable.
Yeah.
And that's what I was meaning at the beginning about that being quite liberating, because, you know, if you're working with other people and you're in busy settings and you're like trying to function as an adult in our world, then you quite often have to suppress these feelings, don't you? Like, you know, it's not a positive thing to be sad or angry or upset or whatever. It's a bit of a weakness. But when you're out there, you've got nobody else to please but yourself. And sometimes you're like, you know what? If you want to be upset, be upset. Like, it'll pass. You know, I've got great faith in whatever I'm feeling will pass. This isn't forever. So let yourself, if you need to cry, cry. If you want to be angry, be angry. And then I would do it for a wee while and I'd be like, oh, well.
I've done that now.
That's me done being angry.
It's so true, though. It's a really interesting thought. And that goes back to that, I guess, that sense of freedom that you felt while you were doing it. You know, it's freedom from kind of the daily grind of life, but also those kind of psychological pressures that you have to deal with when you're, you know, answering emails, phone calls, meetings, that kind of stuff, that where you're always being somebody else, or not being somebody else, but being a different version of you, I guess.
Yes. People are like, how are you? And they don't want to know what emotion you're feeling right now. I want you to tell them what they need to know so they can go and get on with it.
I'm fine, thank you. Really fine. So when did you get back?
So I got back in October last year, the sort of end of October, or mid-October last year.
Okay, how did you readjust to this life that we're talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, was it tough?
Yeah, it was really tough.
Okay.
Like, so tough. So tough. So first world problems, isn't it? Oh my goodness.
It is. But the people I speak to, especially on this podcast, you know, they, you know, these, the I mean, the post-expedition blues are quite famous, aren't they? And but yeah, let's put it into perspective. This is a first world problem.
But I think because I'm like, so, you know, I've always worked with emotions, if you like, you know, I'm quite clued up when it comes to emotions, I'm clued up when it comes to people, I'm clued up with this post sort of trip blues. So I thought I'd be immune to them. I was like, it's fine because I know what's happening. I know the process, like I'm not going to get affected by them. And I didn't get affected in the way that I was like, oh, I really wish I was still out on the road. It was almost like the opposite, like I just wanted things to be normal and things didn't feel normal. So like I went back to work, which was great because it was like, so I went back to work as with the Highland Council at the bridge until Christmas. So I had sort of 6 weeks there and it was Monday to Friday, 9 to 4. And I was like, yes, I actually have somewhere to be on Monday morning at 9 o'clock. I was like, didn't have to think about it. Yeah. Because even deciding what to wear was like, oh, I've not had to do this for 4 months. Like, what to wear? I just wear my I've only got one outfit, it's my cycling shorts. And like having to sort of fit back into that. Like I was training like mad for that year and planning beforehand, and then I was away for the 4 months. So when I came back, I almost had like a year and a half of like my house falling down around me to fix. I was like, really have to get my head back into this. But I don't know. I found it hard to connect to what I'd just done. So everyone around me was dead excited and, you know, really like lovely about it. Really, really lovely. And I could see the Round the World project. I could see me riding my bike on it, but I couldn't feel any of it.
Right.
It was like it was sitting across the table. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Is it because you're still too close to it? Do you think?
Yeah, I think, and people would be honestly so, so kind about how well I'd done, and I couldn't. The compliment, because I was like,
hang on.
I couldn't feel the enormity of what had just happened. I think I was just in a bit of shock. Like, you know, I think it was just a bit of sort of trauma, maybe from all the lack of sleep and living that way and being so exhausted and then just finishing and then like life changing instantly. Like, there was sort of not a lot of buffering going on. It was just straight into straight into not even normal life, because now everybody wanted interviews with you, for you to talk, so, which was great, which is what I wanted, you know, that was amazing. But I didn't take on like how mentally sort of exhausted I'd be, and I couldn't quite put my finger on what it was. Like I didn't know, I knew that I had all this sort of feelings inside me, but I didn't know how to deal with them, and I couldn't really ride my bike. Like I could, and I did, because my car had broken down when I left.
So you had to.
Everywhere. But it was like I didn't have that, like, go out and burst myself up a hill and that will, you know, release some tension. Like, I didn't have that kind of go-to go for a run, because my body was like exhausted and my head was exhausted, and the thought of going out and getting hurt was really hard. Like, I didn't want to do that. So it took me until March. I feel like I went away, I'm in the mountain rescue team, and I went away training with them in March, and it was like a completely different set of people, and it was completely like, in, you know, you're in the mountain rescue team mode, and it's nothing about you and your cycle. And honestly think there was like a turning point. It was like, oh, snap out. Like, I just sort of snapped out of whatever had just gone on for me over winter.
I mean, have you been back out on the bike? I mean, well, you've obviously just done this match the miles.
So I've had a really interesting winter with that. I've been riding my bike, but never like I can't train, you know, I couldn't get my head into training or anything like that. And then there's this race, Highland Trail 550, which is an absolute favorite of mine. It's, you know, where it all began for me, where I fell in love with this way of sort of racing on your bike. I went out, and I was feeling the pressure getting to the start line, to be honest, because I was like, oh goodness, like, people are actually maybe going to be watching me and expecting me to be good, and I have no idea if I can even still ride a bike hard, you know, let alone race it. But I went for it anyway, because I love it, and I love all the people that are at it, and I was like, just go for it. And I was out for 3.5 days, or 4 days, and I realized that actually I couldn't bring, like, to get to the finish. So I'd ridden, I don't even know how far I went, maybe 350 the miles. So you had like 200 left or 250 left. And I'd gone through like all, like, you know, the weather was great by this point. I'd ridden through all the hard weather and the hard sections, but I knew what it was going to take to get to the finish. And like, you have to dig fairly deep into your reserves, and it gets a little bit messy, it gets a little bit hurty, it gets really uncomfortable. And I just sort of had this realization. I was coming down this beautiful, beautiful single track section, like, the views were amazing. I was actually really, like, really content at the time, and I was like, I don't want to hurt tonight, I want to go home tonight. Like, I haven't got that in me to take myself to that place yet. I'd been thinking about it for 2 days when I was out there, but I kept sort of talking myself around, like, come on, you know how this goes. But when I got to that lovely bit of single track, I was like, but if you were loving it, this would be the best place in the world. And you do think it's really amazing, but you still want to go home, Jen. Like, just listen to your body. You need to go home. And so I scratched out of the race, and it was I've never ever felt like that before. I'm really pleased that I did scratch when I did, because I feel I feel really you know, tough that I listened to myself, even though it took me a couple of days to actually hear myself. But it surprised me. Like, I can't believe it's only like 6 months on, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to get hurt. I think I blocked a lot of the pain out around the world. Quite possible. And I'm like, oh, why am I worried about it? Right? The world wasn't that sore. It's like,
Were you okay of finishing? Like, do you feel okay now that you didn't finish that race? I mean, are you reflecting on it as like, actually, that was a really sensible decision? Or is there a little bit of you thinking, have I got this in me still?
I've gone down sort of fascinated route. I am,
Yeah.
anybody that knows about sports psychology, I'm like quizzing them, like,
Right.
tell me about this stuff.
Yeah.
What's going on in my brain? And I went to see James Hayden, who the other night, so I'm down in London just now, he was giving a talk at one of the cafes, and I rode with him a little bit in the Highland Trail, and of course he's done, one Transcon twice and done lots of like really, really amazing rider.
Yeah.
And he talked about that mindset coming out of one race and going straight into the other, and how he couldn't meant how physically he was there, but mentally he couldn't dig that deep. And
Right.
just hearing him saying it, I was like, yes, like I almost shouted it out, like, yes,
I'm
wow.
feeling that. Yeah.
It was like, yeah, it was so cool hearing him saying that. I'm like, oh, that's exactly how I felt. It wasn't a physical thing. I was like mentally unhappy with what I was going to be doing to my body and mind, and didn't feel like I had the reserves to deal with it. I could have maybe got through it and got to the end line. I mean, I pretty much believe that anybody can get to the end line. It is like once you can ride sort of, for a full day, then it's in the head whether you can get to the end or not. But I just felt like I would take the whole year to recover from it, because I still wasn't, I still wasn't resilient enough to do that to myself. So
Sure.
yeah, it's definitely made me rethink my summer and rethink, what I actually need, like what my body needs to fully recover from this. Because maybe I've just come back and I haven't actually fully recovered. I haven't given myself the time, to actually recover from it. So
Sure.
yeah, I was on the
I
journey.
mean, this is my last question. Well, I mean, what is next? What does your summer look like? Are you just gonna chill out, which is we've been talking for 45 minutes now. I feel as a friend I should just tell you, chill out, relax. I don't want you to do anything else.
You talk about Daniel. I don't know this. No, I'm actually very lucky. I'm going to spend the summer out in the States. So the Adventure Syndicate are going out with some friends to ride. I'm not racing, but to ride the Colorado Trail and to recce it, and to do some sort of stuff with sponsors out there. And then when my friends are going to be getting really dirty and messy and grim by racing the Colorado Trail, I'm heading over to California, and I'm meeting a friend over there, and I'm doing a talking tour whilst on my mountain bike, of like round the world and meeting up with different sort of cool folk out there. And me and my pal are going to take our time and sort of bike down in the sunshine. So
Blimey.
there is stuff going on, but
Yeah.
I'm just going to make sure that it's not like that, it's not stressy, and I give myself enough time, for it and things like that. I
That
might
sounds
even get
amazing.
big races instead of cycling all the way and things like that,
Weird.
really weird. Yeah, it'll be lovely. Yeah, it'll be really nice, and hopefully I'll be refreshed for coming back. But
Good,
yeah.
good, good. On to the next big thing. Jenny, just an utter pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for taking the time to join us. Yeah, really interesting, really fascinating, inspirational. So thank you so much.
Nice. Lovely chatting to you. Thank you.
Cheers. And there we go. A huge thanks to Jenny, who I know is seriously busy. So thank you so much for your time. And also thanks to everybody for listening. If you enjoyed it, please leave a review and then make sure to tune in next month, where we hear from another record breaker. Make sure you listen in.